This is Open Mic Live. Let's go! Welcome to this week's episode. We have a very special guest coming. Welcome back to Open Mic Live. This week, I will not be your host because I'm currently on my honeymoon in Japan for the next 2 weeks. So Haik will sit down with Chris Sigaloff, a visionary entrepreneur on a mission to redefine what a library can be. Some people have the old image of dusty bookshelves, while for others, it can be a beautiful sanctuary. Sigaloff is designing the library of the future, a cutting-edge space for learning, creativity, and innovation. Her flagship project, OpenNext, is set to launch in South Amsterdam in 2030, offering young people hands-on experiences with AI, gamification, media production, and more. Inspired by the pioneering program TUMO in Yerevan, Armenia, she's bringing together public and private sectors to build a truly next-gen learning hub. So what does the future of libraries look like? And how can these spaces bridge education and opportunity for the next generation? Enjoy the episode.
Haik! On the mic.
What up, guys?
Welcome back to another episode of Open Mic Live. This afternoon, evening, morning, whatever point of the day you're listening. We have a special guest today. Her name is Chris Sigaloff. I have met her a bit more than a year ago, I believe, when I joined the Trailblazers team of a very special project that is coming up. And this project is also kind of the background of this episode. It's about a modern library that's going to be put down. But before I, go too fast, and spoil everything. I would like to give a special shout out to Chris for making up some time for us, because Chris has a very busy agenda establishing a modern technologically driven library. We're going to discuss about what it takes to actually establish such a institution and how the journey has been so far. I've been involved for some parts along the journey, and perhaps some of those topics will come back. But first of all, without further ado, I would like to welcome Chris at this Open Mic Life episode, and maybe ask her for a short breather. Hey, Chris, what was the first thought that ran through your mind when you woke up today? Because we're recording in the morning. About this podcast episode.
So my name is Chris Sigaloff. And I thought, let me have some extra coffee for this podcast because it is morning. And in a way, I think this project that I'm working on, OpenNext, this library of the future, it's not like I go to bed with it and wake up with it every morning, but it's very close to my heart. So it's not difficult to get me going on this subject. So actually I thought, hey, nice. I'm allowed to talk about something I really like with Haik. I'm excited for that.
Yes, that's something that I like that you're highlighting that, because we do have a lot of conversations about this project. We do brainstorm and strategize about what kind of, what's next for OpenNext. Yeah. But perhaps before we look into the next, we should look into the now. And as we are getting along the way of this journey, we have already been in a process to approach different entities, different parties, inform them about what's going on. And, I would like to kind of, I want to kind of caveat, like pivot from this topic and really kind of focus a bit on how you got into this position of becoming, because I think your role is kwartiermaker, as they call it in Dutch, trailblazer in English, which definitely means that.
That sounds much better, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so as well. It does sound like a storm, because a trailblazer is usually someone that walks ahead and creates the path for the group behind them.
Yeah.
But have you felt it like a storm navigating through this? Because it's something very unprecedented.
No, it does not feel like a storm, but it does feel that you're kind of walking ahead, and that I think this whole term of at least in Dutch, a kwartiermaker, it does come a little bit from the military, yeah, where the person would first go in and create kind of the room so that the soldiers afterwards could put up their tents. So yeah, it does feel like you're trying to run ahead, that you're trying to be the one who sets the camp up for the other ones that are coming after you. So it feels sometimes to be a little bit in front of the troops, perhaps, but that is also something I really enjoy. I think I enjoy that. It's sometimes difficult and sometimes it feels a bit complicated, but it's actually, I think, the position I really like to be into.
All right. So, you know, the Oba Next, it's most people, when they think about a library, they are thinking about, you know, the classical view of rows of books, quiet place to work.
Yeah. So, and perhaps it's also because you just asked me how I came into this. And perhaps it's also, I would like to elaborate a little bit on that, because I think libraries have always been quite close to my heart. Not because I really, you know, I talk to a lot of people and they say, oh, my mother worked at the library, or I used to go to the library so often when I was a child. I don't really have that. I think I grew up in a little village. I don't even think there was a library. But I've been working a long time in the field of innovation and in the field of learning. And a lot of times the problems with those kind of places is that sometimes these places are very much for the elite in a way, because you can only innovate when perhaps the basic needs are met. But what I really like about libraries is that they are really public places, and they're really for everyone. They're really not only for the people that, you know, have high education or are from very kind of wealthy backgrounds. So especially in the Netherlands, libraries are everywhere. Every town, even every village, has a library. And already in the city of Amsterdam, there are about 28 branch libraries. And, you know, also homeless people go into the library. The library is a warm place. You can get your coffee for free. So they're really these inclusive places. But there are also these places where actually from traditionally already have been these places which are about learning and development, but they're not schools. It's not like you have to get a diploma, you have to get good grades. It's kind of this open, free place where you can go. And I think traditionally libraries have been this place where they kind of teach you that the world is bigger than your own bedroom, that there is a life outside. And traditionally, you could find that out because you could open a book. And then in that book, you could perhaps, you know, suddenly enter into another world, be in a story. So I think this place of a library being this kind of stepping stone into the world is still really valuable. And so when I had been working a lot in fields of innovation and learning, I always kind of was interested in libraries. But I was also interested in libraries because libraries don't change very easily. They're a little bit like schools, you know, when you would ask your perhaps grandfather to, you know, you would bring him with a mask and you would put him in a school, and then you would take off the mask and say, where are you? Even though it's a school in a very different age, your grandfather most likely would be able to say immediately, oh, this is a school. And I think with libraries, you also have that. Like, it's still, you go to an average library, you see rows of books, you see people being quiet, you're reading. Which is also quite astonishing because our world around us is changing so much. I mean, the world that we live in now is so different than the world that our grandparents lived in. But the library hasn't changed so much. It's still also very, in a sense, still very much similar to the libraries of 100 years ago. And of course, they do change, but the pace of change is perhaps not so fast. So those two things, this thing that this library is still so valuable and so for everyone and exclusive, but also that libraries, yeah, are not so fast in changing, are the two things that really draw me to this library. Mm-hmm. And is why I was very excited to be able to get this position as the trailblazer or project leader of OBA Next. Yeah. Because it's kind of a dream come true, because you're allowed to work with this really beautiful ambition and goal of a library. Mm-hmm. But you're also, it's also my task to think about how libraries can stay future proof and how they can be relevant now, but also for the futures and the future generations.
Hey, and Chris, how is that made possible by Oba Next? What are some things that Oba Next will do different from a traditional library?
Yeah, so I think we are looking, so Oba Next is going to be placed, and it's going to be a very big new library, about 8,000 square meters. And it's going to, this new building is going to be built in the southeast of Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. In Kraaienest, yes, which is really a specific area in the southeast, mainly being residential neighborhood until now, but also a place where there's a lot of talent. But you could say it is being underserved in many ways as well. So this big new library is coming there. And we're really setting it up as a kind of laboratory for future learning. So it's really, we'll focus on the next generation. So on young people, you could say age 15 to 27. And what we're trying to do is, how do these young people want to develop their talents? How do they want to learn? How do they want to meet other people? How do they want to relate to the world around them? But not only through the traditional way, through books, but also, and you could say that's kind of your head, the cognitive side, but also through using their hands and their hearts. So you could say what we're doing in this OBA Next is that we're developing programs that are around music, around computers, about new technologies, AI, around new media, about journalism, about filmmaking, and all trying to do it in a very playful way. So how learning can not only be about acquiring knowledge, but it also can be a place where you actively create knowledge together, and very much through hands-on experimentation. And in this way, we're trying to develop the traditional role of a library, kind of evolve into a dynamic hub for personal development and connection.
Something I haven't seen before is that it has chosen to go into a kind of a hybrid model, where it's, you know, typically libraries are a public good. They are usually governmentally funded. Municipalities usually do that. And in this case, Oba Next is entrepreneurial step by integrating a tech school, TUMO, within its walls. And at the same time, also, perhaps pulling in some partners that can help the integration. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Who are, besides the municipality, the government, and the youth that needs the access to this learning material, who are holistically the stakeholders of OBA Next?
I mean, traditionally, a library, of course, is a publicly funded institution. So normally, most of the finance, the bulk of the finance, comes from the local government or the national government. And what we're also doing is, of course, that we're also investigating much more of a partnership model. And this has kind of different reasons. First of all, perhaps also it's about opening up the library itself to say, yes, it's not just the library which can supply the ways and programs for people to learn, but we should actually use the expertise of all other organizations within society. And that's not just public organizations. These can also be private organizations. So one of the things that is kind of what we're doing is that we're not waiting to 2030 until the library opens the doors before that we're starting. We're kind of like building the plane while flying it, you could say. So we're setting up labs, and in these labs, we're experimenting with new ways of programming, new ways of partnerships, and also new ways of financing. And one of the programs that had caught our eye from the beginning is a program which is actually from Armenia, from Yerevan, which is called TUMO. You know it well, yes. Hike, but it's the Center for Creative Technologies. And also in Armenia, this TUMO program is actually not a public institution, but comes from the private world. So we teamed up with different people and organizations, companies in the Netherlands, who all had this mutual dream of bringing TUMO to Amsterdam, because TUMO has a franchise model, and you have a TUMO in Berlin and in Paris and in Los Angeles, but not yet one in Amsterdam. And TUMO, by the way, is a free after schooling program for children from 12 to 18. So just to dive into this one a little bit, we really got some big tech companies based in Amsterdam who were willing to kind of set up a pilot and see if TUMO can become a program which belongs to OBA Next, which fits also into the ambition of OBA Next. And this for the OBA, for the Public Library of Amsterdam, is also an experiment in how to work together in such a public-private cooperation. And this is really a kind of novel something that we're setting this up. We're actually opening in September 2025, so it's coming up. I would say the key stakeholders, of course, are the young people, are the ones that we're doing it for. So, we're building their library and we're trying to set up a program that is super interesting for them. But we're doing this from a very, public-private partnership. Does that answer your question?
Quite well, actually. And that is the unprecedented thing, I believe, because, combining these different forms of stakeholders, I can imagine it must be a hustle, so to say. You're dealing with a really broad spectrum of interests. Can you looking back at, before you started this position for OBA, what were some of the challenges that you never anticipated would be on your road?
Well, I've always kind of been working in dynamic environments. So, of course, this one is different again, but I don't know if there's so many unexpected ones. What I really like about this project is that you're actually building a building, something very concrete. And I've never really had that before. And that is really a nice one because it makes it so clear, and doors will actually open.
Yeah.
And already now we're building a lab, and this lab is also a new building because it's like 1,100 100 square meters, and the building has just begun and it's going to open its doors this summer. And that makes it very concrete and very clear, and it makes it very, you know, those time frames are kind of fixed. So that's actually something I'm enjoying a lot. I think I also see the effect and the power of a space that is really important. I mean, you can talk about ambitions, you can talk about new programs, but it's very important to, I think all these things also need something physical where you can come together. It reminds me a little bit, I used to work for about 10 years at Nyenrode University here in the Netherlands. And it was quite an influential time for me because it was my first real job. And I worked there developing management and development programs. And it was a very free time with a lot of interesting people. And I think it was there that really my fascination, but also the basic of, you know, theories about learning and development. It's there where I got, encountered with those, that field. But there was a colleague of mine, and his kind of ambition was always like, how can we create places or spaces where ordinary people can do extraordinary things? And I think, I still think that's quite a beautiful saying or ambition to have, because it doesn't, it kind of says like, it doesn't all mean, you know, of course, we're talking about talent development and about learning, but it's not always all to do about the individual. It's not like, oh, you know, are you talented or not? I think a lot of these things have to do about, were you, are you placed in the situation where you actually have chance to develop your talents? And we are also a little bit like sheep, you know, we are very sensitive to the places that we're put into. If we're put into a nice green field and there's grass, we start behaving in a certain way. And if we're put into a box, which is not nice at all, it really affects us. So I think, it's very important to think about that we're creating spaces, and you can look at this in kind of different levels. We can also see that, for example, the southeast of Amsterdam is lacking these kind of spaces because, you know, there's so many very special people who can do, and ordinary people who can do extraordinary things, but they lack a lot of these spaces. I think this is what Obanek should be, this kind of space where ordinary people can do extraordinary things. And the challenge, you know, if you're asking about challenge, is, how do you, you know, there are a lot of all these different stakeholders, and there are a lot of different stakes, and the timing and speed between all these different stakeholders are quite different from each other. So, you have a lot of, for example, some of the stakeholders in the community can also be like, hey, we don't want things to change too fast, or hey, is it still going to be our library, or is something taking over, is a UFO landing here in our neighborhood? You know, the city of Amsterdam, the municipality, is taking risks. It's about money, it's about being, you know, being very careful about this money and how it's being spent. Then you have the library, who sometimes like, hey, why are you saying that you're the one who's innovating? We are also innovating. Or aren't you taking away our core, the books? Be careful. And then you have the tech companies who say, can you hurry up a bit? This is a very slow way of working.
Yeah, I mean, if you compare the public with the private sector, I've kind of worked in both, so I can imagine that there is some sort of asymmetry when the two start to work together. But you know, I believe overall, everywhere where I've went and I pitched the library, despite the, you know, the tremendous cost, despite that we are kind of like looking at a very experimental experimental initiative, everybody has been enthusiastic about it. Everybody has kind of not seen the negatives of it. Not necessarily because, obviously we are very positive about it ourselves, but it kind of makes sense. You know, having a library that is contemporary, having a library that, you know, focuses on who goes to the library, and that's, well, that's anyone who wants to acquire knowledge, but it's also how do we acquire knowledge in 21st century, and that's very different than, you know, in the times of, yeah, I actually looked this up, what was the first library, and apparently that was the library of Ashurbanipal, who was like a king of Assyrian origin. And he used to basically raid different Babylonian villages and collect their clay tablets of trade. And it's very interesting that the interest at that point was trade and bookkeeping in this case. Whereas right now, the interest is much more focused on technology-driven topics. I think you mentioned a couple of them.
Yeah, and I think also ethic topics. I think, of course, the whole question about what is still knowledge, who has the power over knowledge, mm-hmm. what is information, you know, kind of what are facts, who's in charge. I think this is also a very big topic at the moment, of course, mm-hmm. especially in the world that we're living. And how can libraries still be kind of neutral places or places where you can also ask these ethical questions? That is a very important one. It's also kind of interesting to see that we're not alone in this. It's almost like it's kind of funny because I think a couple of years ago, or perhaps 5-10 years ago, there was this question like, yeah, are libraries still kind of valuable, mm. you know, or I think there was this whole debate about, you know, are people still reading books? Are books still going to have a place in our society? Are libraries still something that we is, you know, is part of the infrastructure of our societies? Mm-hmm. And I think also in the COVID period, it was quite special that around the world, you actually saw that libraries were actually kind of hallmarked as essential, important places. So you also saw that, for example, in the Netherlands, you know, everything had to close down, but libraries could still open up because they were seen as, yes, you know, these are places that people still need to be able to meet. People still need to be able to go to a library. That was quite special, you know, it was doctors and libraries and, you know, but the supermarkets had to close by, you know, yeah. or the shops. Or the pop podia had to close, but the libraries could stay open. And you also see that, especially in Europe, that there's been almost kind of a library revolution going on. And there've been a really opening up of very beautiful big libraries in Denmark and Norway. And then these libraries, new style, where you still have books, but they're also very much focused on maker spaces, combining all different functions, examining how people come together. The ODI in Helsinki is a beautiful example where you kind of have three levels, and the top level is what they call the book heaven. So this is more the traditional library. And then the second level is very much about kind of do-it-yourself culture. Mm-hmm. So you have big sewing machines, but also digital maker spaces. And the first level, when you come in, is much more where you also have a place where you can get information, where you can renew your passports, but also mm-hmm. have a big cafe, oh, wow. film. Exhibition rooms, so you see this movement not only in the Netherlands.
Yeah. Hey Chris, and you know, the library being kind of a central place to, you know, get inspired, get or acquire knowledge. Another big important factor is that it's not an empty space; it's a place others with similar interests come. You know, on that, I would actually like to ask you something maybe a bit more personal. You know, because I believe in our lives we have all kinds of mentors or people that inspire us. And I'm just curious about you. Do you have someone maybe in your direct circles that inspired you, that really kind of shaped your belief system or who you have become? And do you perhaps also kind of have a public figure that did something similar for you?
I think I also perhaps look more at spaces than people, perhaps. Although I can be very quickly, you know, I listen to a podcast and then I can be very excited and very inspired by someone. But I don't know if I have someone I would follow all the time. I think that period at Nijrode, what I was mm-hmm. telling you about, was quite an influential period, mostly because it was a lot of interesting people thinking about the subject of learning and innovation. I think also about innovation, there are so many, of course, interesting thoughts about that. But one of the things, of course, is that in my opinion, it's very difficult to innovate when you're very strictly following a plan. So it's perhaps very good to kind of have a North Star, you know, a direction where you want to go to. But you really need to have also a lot of room to be surprised and to step on a new train or something that is coming around when you think, oh, something is happening. So you need to be able to kind of be very agile and keep on dancing in a way. And I think, I definitely have people around me or I read about that do that. And I always find it interesting because it's also not so difficult, easy, because we also live in a world where, especially when the budgets are big and you have a big task where, you know, there's a lot of this, people say, no, but you need to have a strict plan and we need to know what we're doing and we need to be able to say how the budget is going to be implemented and how you're going to be responsible for that. But I think it's very important to, yeah, of course we need to do that, but it's also very important to kind of keep that spirit of being surprised and being experimenting and learning. And that also means that sometimes we can fail a little bit and that something cannot go right. So I think that's an important thing. And at least I try to tell myself, like, yeah, even perhaps also when you get older and you think that everything should be more stricter and more serious, and how you're in charge to work on such a big project as this building and developing this new library, that you kind of keep that spirit of, yeah, kind of looking like a child into the world and be inquisitive and be surprised and be able to willing to kind of jump when the chance comes.
Yeah.
And perhaps also be able to dare to that thing. Yeah. Perhaps also sometimes say sorry, like I made a mistake. This wasn't really the right chance. I think the whole story of Tuumo is quite a nice one because, you know, when I started on this project, I always had a kind of slide desk with a couple of inspirations. And I don't know, somewhere along the line, perhaps 10 years ago, I met someone who'd been a guest lecturer at Tuumo. And this person had told me about this and was just very excited. And then I started look up Tuumo on the internet and I'd never been there. But just what I saw about that and the videos really grasped me because it was really about learning in such a new way and also in such a playful way. And it even touched me just looking at videos. It kind of, you know, made me a little bit emotional, like, oh, that's something I would like, perhaps would have liked for myself. And so I had this Tuumo on a slide as an inspiration for Oba Next. And then I actually, I was always talking about that. And then my director suddenly said, hey, Chris, I met someone who was talking about what you always talk about, this Tuumo or Tuuma or, you know, not really knowing the name. You go to this meeting. And I went there and then I met Corinne Figureux, who's the founder of TomTom, and she just come back from a trip to Armenia and to Tumo. And she was super excited. And then she said, I want to bring Tumo to Amsterdam. And then I said, oh, but that's also my dream. And then in a very short time also, because, yeah, she was very dedicated to this, we kind of pulled it off. And also with the help of a lot of people working on this, like in less than a year to set this, the finance and this consortium to start this up in Amsterdam. And I think, you know, if you would have asked me, did you have a clear cut plan about this? The answer would be no. But I did have this kind of curiosity and then, yeah, and also the belief you can never do this by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you will have to create new groups, work together. And that brings us a little bit back to what you said before. You know, this also means you need to kind of open the doors for other stakeholders, other parties, other organizations than what you did in the past, which is a bit scary and new, perhaps, and also challenging. But I think it is the only way to really start doing new things.
I agree.
A bit of another answer to perhaps your question in one.
So, Chris, what if there were no financial limitations? So imagine OpenNext would receive a blank check, unlimited budget, no bureaucracy, anything is possible. What will be the first thing you realize? And why that?
What I really would like is that to create something like truly immersive. So a space that you step into and that learning is just not only kind of an intellectual thing, but that you are really kind of in it, where you can feel and experience the concepts you are exploring. That is something that really, yeah, that would be my dream. I also have the Eden Project in Cornwall, which was this derelict mine. And with a lot of budget, they created in the most beautiful kind of architecture, the biggest indoor tropical rainforest in the world.
Oh.
How about if we could have something like the Eden Project in Oba next, not a rainforest, but like a world about learning, talent, technology, where you just step in and where you feel it and experience it.
Technological forest with all kinds of...
Yeah, but also a playground where you can sit on swings, where you can hang in a net, where you can take a little nap, where you can watch a movie, where you can make music, where you can build things with your hands. Yeah, that would be great.
We know that OpenNext will thrive on the collaborations it sets, and you know, it's collaborations with businesses, with government, but also other impact-driven organizations, maybe local ones even. So there are probably still some opportunities that we can explore and involve new partners in. So if you could extend an invitation, an open invitation to companies or other potential stakeholders, what would you ask them? And what role can they play in developing OpenNext?
Yeah, so I would love to have partners who would want to be part of this kind of learning space. And it's not only about funding, it's really about creating this mutual laboratory where, yeah, all the expertise from the public, from the private world, the art world, also really important, can kind of merge to create something extraordinary.
Okay.
So I would love everyone, you know, or organizations or anyone with expertise also in this to kind of come on board and experiment, innovate, and kind of, yeah, help shape the future of learning for the next generations.
What will be like some great examples, maybe some organizations OBANEX is already talking with, or something we're looking at approach, some organizations we're looking at approaching?
So in this year, in 2025, we're working with a couple of fields of interest that we think that the young people we hear that the youngsters are really keen on to learn about. Mm-hmm. So we have these different themes. So we have music. So we're building music studios and looking for partners to develop a new music program.
Mm-hmm.
We're working around the topic of media, mm-hmm. new media, filmmaking. We're working around the topic of new technology and mainly AI and what are the influences and the consequences of AI
mm-hmm.
for a public space like the library, and how do they affect learning and development.
Mm-hmm.
We have also kind of sustainability, a bit of a big term, but it's also about, for example, we're building something that we're calling the Roots Library,
mm-hmm.
which is really about where our food and plants and our kind of heritage is coming from and how that affects us and what our relationship is as humans with nature and how we can also make this very attractive for young people. We have a track which is all around kind of gamification and playful learning. And then we also have like the whole track around design and creativity. Of which Tumo is an example. So these are the kind of six topics that we're developing this year. And around each topic, we're looking for a consortium of partners to develop new inspiring programs,
mm-hmm.
to experiment how they fit in with the library of the future. We're investigating how we can organize this and also how we can finance this.
Okay. So let me address the question that they might not dare to ask. So beyond the social impact they would be making by jumping on board, what's in it for them?
To be part of this experience and this learning space.
Yeah.
I would also invite people, if they want to test something out, that this is a great test bed where people could test their new technologies mm-hmm. or their new programs or assumptions. I don't think we have so many of these kind of test beds, so mm-hmm. it would be really good to have that as a playground, and they could be part of that. This is a space where we will examine and really learn and reflect on what's happening, but things can also... You know, we can also very quickly adjust things.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're also building a consortium that will go into the future, the OBANEX in the new big building. So partners, you know, this is also the way to become part of the big new library from 2030. And all the things, of course, are... How do you call that when you also have your name?
Mm.
Don't legacy. Know if we want the name of the legacy and the
legacy behind
of all these. Yeah, to be part of this.
Of course.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that's obviously interesting of itself, right? The social impact in a way has also an intrinsic value to these companies, because they get to somehow influence or shape the learning of the future generation.
Yeah, and also, Heike, of course, it's also getting in touch with these new generations.
The talent pools.
I think what I hear now is that the organizations also say, yeah, we find it interesting because we are, we're investing in our future employees, of course, as well.
Exactly.
And giving them the skills that are needed for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. In 5 years, we'll be opening the doors to the OBANEX 230.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the great thing is, what I hope is that it just won't be a building, but it's kind of a culmination of 5 years of real world experimentation and learning. So that at that time, because we've been kind of experimenting in the lab, we know what to do, we know with whom to do it,
mm-hmm.
and we know kind of how to do it. And Yeah, I hope it's always good, huh, to have big dreams, but that the moment that the door opens, we don't have to think, oh, how we're going to fill a big building, but that it will, we're kind of already like, whoo, finally, the 1,000 square meters have become way too small. We need this. And that already at that time, it will kind of serve, as a global example of what a modern library can be. And I would also be super proud if somehow there would be an article in the New York Times, for example, which says it's not only a great new library, but it's also being built in a way that is really with the community, with the stakeholders, so that it's also the example of a real community library. So that would make me very proud.
Well, once we're that far, I will try to help you get that article in the New York Times. I know I will be there with the launch, with the opening of both the lab and probably in 5 years also the permanent building. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Chris, I really want to thank you for your time and your insightful ideas and your contribution to this. I hope that once the building is there and it's operational and the first classes, the first lessons have been learned, you would come back to this podcast and maybe have like a whole new update of what's going on then and there.
Thank you, Hike, for inviting me. And the word that just also popped into my mind is a people's library. And this all starts and ends with people, strong communities, which we're lucky to have in the Southeast, strong partnerships, and strong friends.
Yes.
And I think that's what we're doing it for.
Amazing. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for tuning in. See you next week on Open Mic Live.